Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm always so excited and looking forward to fun conversations with you and our guest. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in a field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. Our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success.
In this episode, we will discuss winning the ERP game with Mr. David Stefanik. Mr. Stefanik is the author of the book, Winning the ERP Game, which shares insights, lessons learned, best practices, and coaching moments focused on the classic pillars of enterprise resource planning and digital transformation. People, which we link to organizational change management, business processes, and technology. Mr. Stefanik is also the founder of STX Consulting. STX Consulting provides SAP and ERP package application advisory, a consultancy focused on enterprise excellence, value realization, and governance across people, processes, and technology. STX Consulting leverages process mining and AI to drive process optimization and empower your team. Mr. Stefanik is also a proven senior leader with over 30 years of IT and business transformation experience, including broad SAP, ERP, and APO, and supply chain leadership, FSCM, master data, process improvement, governance, and systems integration. Additionally, Mr. Stefanik managed one of the largest SAP solutions in the world, overseeing a global 300-plus person team, center of excellence team, and the ITSM processes. I'm really excited for this conversation, Jack.
Likewise, Jonathan. Thank you. So in this episode, we will discuss some key influences or success factors in ERP organizational change success. David will share pointers to his approach to the ERP organizational change triad, people, processes, and technology. We will discuss some of the fundamental pillars of success, project failure, definition of success, role of corporate culture, the role of effective learning and development, or L&D, organizational conflict, and more. ERP organizational change is often a complex and dynamic interaction among employees, business processes, and technology. Research suggests that organizations that become aware of, implement, and put the appropriate emphasis on the vast array of context-specific CSS, or critical success factors, will be better prepared and positioned with the organizational skills needed to increase the likelihood of ERP assimilation and meeting the desired organizational goals. Research on organizational change has included studies from many different perspectives with a general focus on technology, processes, and people. In general, ERP implementation methods, systems, practices, and organizational complexities vary greatly, and that many complex factors potentially contribute to a large array or variance between success and failure. For this reason, understanding effective implementation processes and CSFs may benefit organizations. This episode will explore this notion further. What really matters and what really makes for an organization's success is being mindful of how critical the triad, the people, processes, and technology is, and hence the true differentiators and approach that ERP solutions, methodologies, and leadership bring to the table. David, thank you so much for being on our show today. Jonathan and I are really looking forward to you sharing your experience.
Thanks, Jack and Jonathan. I'm excited to be here and really appreciate the opportunity to join you both on this podcast and share and collaborate together.
All right. Hey, let's dive in. So first question, David, you mentioned in your book that, quote, principles apply to all ERP and packaged application projects, regardless of the software supplier, whether in the cloud or on-premise, large or small, while implementing and or while in operation. In your book, Winning the ERP Game, shows in detail and by example how to improve your approach across these pillars to enable achieving your expectations. So to start us off, David, what are and how would you define the major pillars or principles behind ERP organizational change success?
Yeah, that's a great question to start the conversation. As we look at what change management means in any company trying to implement and support an ERP project, or quite frankly, any packaged software project, we have to look at all the dimensions or these pillars of the business that we'll need to transform. The pillars include the organizational alignment and the change management of the people, who is doing what tasks with roles and responsibilities. Then you have your business processes and technology, which undergo major change. So you have to understand how significant an effort this is. These are the three classic pillars of digital transformation for organizational change success: the people, the processes, and the technology. In simple terms, it's really the people involved in the solution, the business processes in scope, and the underlying technology that enables it. So in order to institute a more controlled approach for effective change, I've added a fourth pillar to the transformation journey and explicitly called out governance. Governance is the key to keeping the transformation project train on the rails and meeting the expectations of success. You know, projects come off the rails quickly and often. And if you don't do something and put up guardrails to govern the project, don't expect success to result. So you'll hear me share a lot about tools to help with governance, and specifically process mining. I'm really quite energized about this capability and the results that process mining unearths.
Great insight. Thank you, David. You know, you'd mentioned that a key pillar is sharing with the organization just how significant this change can be, right? And leveraging your pillars or your principles. And I think one of the key aspects to ERP organizational change is being honest and realistic about expectations, right? And setting that right out of the gates at the onset of a project, right? It's just building that awareness, because if organizations don't know what they don't know, it can be hard to prepare for, you know, the up and coming challenges. But great insight.
Yeah, I'm just going to say there's that whole framework, Jack, that we'll talk more about that. Yeah, it really does. If you don't know where you're going, you really are going to come off the rails pretty quickly.
Exactly.
David, I really love that insight around adding governance as another pillar here. Often I see organizations focus on the content solution of ERP rather than a way to course correct or adjust the project of organizational ERP change. So I want to dive into that a little more. You asked this question in your book. I don't know if you ask it rhetorically, but I'd be really interested to see what you found. Why do so many ERP projects fail to deliver on their expectations? What have you found, David?
Yeah, and Jonathan, it's not a rhetorical question. what I've found is that it's very true. There are so many examples of projects that fail to deliver on expectations and reasons, but it almost always comes down to these underlying pillars that I've talked about, you know, the classic pillars plus the governance and how they're being executed. So when the project starts to come off the rails, do you know it? And are you correcting, or is it going off the rails? You know, if you just do a simple internet search, you'll find hundreds of articles on ERP and packaged application software projects that failed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ERP projects are really, really hard work. I've done many, many projects in my lifetime, and it just takes a great ecosystem team to achieve success. So I chose the book title, Winning the ERP Game, very purposefully. You know, the book draws on many sports references and quotes, and sports is really a good analogy as it demonstrates the need for the organizations to compete with intensity and also continue to adapt and innovate. Just look at some of the great teams. So when you observe how winning sports programs are built and sustained, you see that there are many parallels for businesses to achieve and maintain that success. Things like great leaders, players, great coaches, training, teaming, dealing with change, process mechanics, and on. All these are needed to successfully implement and sustain an ERP project and solution. So, you know, just go look at, you know, the Golden State Warriors and what they've achieved through the years, for example.
So, David, you mentioned in your response to that question, you mentioned success. So suppose you're leading a kickoff meeting for an organization that is just starting an ERP implementation. How would you define and describe for them success in terms of ERP organizational change?
Well, you know, being a good consultant, I would never define success for anyone. What I do is I turn to my customer, and since every customer's definition of success is different,
great point.
I engage them. I engage the organization. You start by asking them to define, what do you believe success would be? How does that align with your business strategy and vision? What are the obstacles? And a number of other related questions. These are like the classic, typical questions, you know, from a stakeholder management discussion, which I'm sure you've exercised. Right. I discuss stakeholder management in the book, but I know that the audience is very familiar with the topic. But it's a very important notion, this whole idea of stakeholder management and using those questions to kind of steer the conversation and find out what success is. So some of the types of responses I've heard, you know, to this question of what's your idea? You know, if I say, what's the definition of success? You know, that what you'll hear are things like, well, we need to meet our customers' needs, or we need to meet the business case and the ROI, or, you know, what about on time and on budget? What about empowered teams? What about competitive edge? So at the end of the day, if you distill and synthesize this feedback down, obviously with some advisory coaching blended in, and then you summarize that, you typically arrive at what the customer views success as, and then you can use that as a baseline going forward.
David, that's one of the best responses to that question I've ever heard. And I've asked probably hundreds of people that same question. thank you. I love
it's
that.
It's a lot of dirt under the fingernails here, Jay.
It is. You put it so well. You put it so well is, you know, you let the organization determine what it is, and then you use that as your basis for further discussion and guidance. What a great response. Thank you.
And the process consciousness you show by just in that answer, I think really resonates with me. And so I want to take that and see if I can get your insight on what do you see is the success rates in ERP implementation in the marketplace today, based on your own work, based on what you see and read? How good a job are we doing at actually defining success for customers and then meeting it?
Yeah, that's just another great question to build on the last conversation. You know, as I mentioned earlier, there's no shortage of articles and research on this topic. And basically, the overwhelming results have been less than good for ERP implementation success rates. If you just do an internet search on ERP failures, and some of these failures are legendary. I don't know, you know, if you've done any basic research, who can forget about the confectionery company who decided to go live before Halloween? And then they started missing Halloween shipments because the whole thing fell apart. And so some of the studies suggest that more than 70%, that number is incredible when you think about it, but 70% of the projects failed to meet business manager expectations. So, and my experiences support this. For example, on one of my most recent projects, so I'm meeting with the CEO and the founder. And so one of the first questions he asked me is, am I the only one struggling to get value out of my ERP implementation? It was like, it's like, there it is, right in
There's
front of me.
There's a loaded question if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
So the net is, Jonathan, yes, there are significant opportunities to improve the win rate, and that includes defining it and then driving that whole transformation journey to achieve it.
And David, this makes a ton of sense. I want to follow up on this question. What are the common mistakes you see, both on the client side and on the practitioner side?
Well, that's I could give you a consulting answer and say it depends, but it can go from selecting the wrong partner, selecting the wrong package, not giving organizational change its due. There are so many reasons ERP projects fail that it's hard to pinpoint one. But in some cases, it's kind of round up the usual suspects. And in other cases, it's, I never saw that one before. But, but for the most part, they all come back to these pillars we've talked about, change management, the processes, and the technology, and then the governance around it. And if you can manage those four items, and interesting enough, I've sat in on a number of executive councils where to a person, the word governance, it comes to the top in so many different conversations. It's never spelled out. You never see the classic transformation programs talk about it, but it's there. Everybody acknowledges it. So I've tried to bring it front and center because I really do think, governance is critical to the success. So it'll get you back on the rails quickly.
Yeah, you're making a process that's really covert, overt, and everyone knows it. That's just, it's such a powerful thing to do.
David, I know this is a loaded question, but what role does the overall corporate culture play in ERP organizational change, and why?
And that is a loaded question. But not surprisingly, the answer is, of course, corporate culture plays a huge role, right?
Right.
Because the magnitude of change involved with ERP projects, it touches every aspect of the business and culture. So, some cultures have managed to more effectively institutionalize the mindset of pervasive change and adapting and evolving. It's all part of the daily process. These are the cultures, if you will, where continually learning and challenging convention is embraced. I'm sure you've seen it. You can usually tell very quickly what the corporate culture will be based on your initial discussions with the customer and what type of challenges you can expect. And then you're going to discuss with them, okay, this is what I've heard initially. How do we collaborate and address this?
So let's dive into that a little more. What do you see are the major steps in actually addressing the people and the cultural needs of ERP organizational change?
Well, the major steps, I think they can kind of classify them into three buckets, at least from an ERP perspective, and probably once again, any packaged application transformation. The first step is just getting the business ready. The second is preparing the people. And then third is then managing the transition, right? From a cultural perspective, those are the things. And so this includes all the obvious change management streams, like, a change plan that's tied to the strategic vision. Executive sponsors and champions, stakeholder management, establishing change leaders, great communications, great training and learning, empowerment of people, things like identifying key inhibitors, and then just obviously the kind of the governance piece, the tracking, the measuring, and kind of continuing to iterate on it.
Where does the governance sit in relation to people and cultural change in the way you think about this?
Well, there's a couple dimensions to it. I kind of look at the people and cultural change. There's a couple work streams that kind of continually go on here. But the people are involved, whether that's if you look at training, right? Training is a good example of how do you govern training, right? Well, with process mining, for instance, as a tool, you can see, are people learning how to run the process correctly? And if you benchmark person A against person B, are they really, you know, this one takes 10 minutes to run through those transactions, and this one takes 7 minutes to run through those transactions. Is it just because, you know, they're slower running the process, or are there other fundamental reasons? And you can actually drill down into more specifics, and you could actually find where the gates may be. And now you can use that to improve your educational process with those individuals. And you could actually take it to even the next step, where you can empower the people to review the results.
Well said, David. Thank you. So a slight change in topic, Dave. What do you have to say about the value of proper system selection? What role does that play in ERP organizational change? Are systems different? Does it really matter? Or should we be placing a lot of value in objective vendor-neutral system selection?
Well, you know, as discussed, obviously technology is one of the three classic pillars of transformation. And the system, and in addition to the system, I would always add supplier selection. And that's not only just the supplier of the system, but it's also who you're going to be using as a systems integrator, who you're going to partner with.
Yeah.
Because the systems integration partners and the business advisory consultants you choose play a very critical role as well. So
yeah.
I think you have to have a solution that lines up with your culture. So choosing the right partner and the right system is very important, because, you know, these things touch other pillars. So if you have a system that is more difficult than another to use, well, you can expect your user experiences and the user interfaces to be heavily impacted. So when you see that happen, well, that's going to drive how your users exercise the solution and also your change management training. So if the user interface and the user experience isn't intuitive, don't expect a good business adoption rate. And with a poor business adoption rate of solution, how likely will business success result?
So what challenges do you most often face as you implement ERP? And I apologize, it's a two-part question, Dave, but what challenges do you most often face? And are they also the same issues, or do the actual issues in the amplitude vary by project? Just in general, Dave, what are the typical issues that you see, and do they vary across organizational context? Are they always the same set of issues, or do they just vary in amplitude? You know, every organization has the same type of issues, but they just vary as far as the significance of those challenges.
Yeah, I did mention earlier about the myriad of challenges ERP projects face, and they do vary by size. So many may be classified as the usual suspects, right? But a global deployment across multiple geographies and countries has a different set of issues than an ERP project for a 300-person, one-location firm. But you do see, you know, you do see the usual suspects, maybe not to the same scale, such as lack of commitment to change management, training issues. Oh, they're not leveraging the right advisory consulting people, or they've chosen the wrong partner. And master data, that's another classic, you know, ERP failures. And then user experience, and then too much customization, that's another classic one. But regardless of the challenge, the pillars and the framework that I mentioned, you know, around this, they can still mitigate these challenges. So, you know, if I use a simple example, right? You know, getting organizations to really commit to a focused change management effort, it's something I've seen, you know, sometimes quite a bit of a challenge, and I suspect you've seen the same.
Certainly.
Yeah. And then let's take a mid-sized company. You know, it's not unusual for the customer to basically say, you know, I'm just going to have my project manager oversee the change management work stream along with their day-to-day project management duties. And in these cases, I'll typically intervene and say, whoa, you know, this is really important. Change management is really, really important. So we talk about ways to better manage that work stream. And we hopefully agree, and we can kind of move forward, not only just manage it, but govern it and do it effectively. So that whole collaboration with the customer that we talked earlier about. But, you know, I think that's the key way, you know, intervening is kind of going forward and making the recommendations to your customer and hopefully having somebody who's willing to, you know, listen to recommendations that make a lot of sense.
Yeah, well said, David. Proper approach, pillars, and principles mitigate despite the unique and vast array of challenges. That was well said. Good point.
David, there's so much there that I'm sitting here smiling about. As someone who works in the organizational change side, the recognition that they're parallel structures, and so to each their own, because they're integrated and whole in themselves, is so powerful. So thank you for that, and that you bring that to your clients. I want to dive deeper here. So you mentioned learning and development as a great example as the relationship between ERP and organizational change. How do you actually run that process? When do you start training? During implementation, before, post? What's your process steps for aligning those resources within a company together to support ERP organizational change?
Yeah, and Jonathan, training and learning is obviously essential to the change management workstream. And quite frankly, it's before, during, and after. You never stop learning, right? It's the old adage, you should never stop learning. And, you know, these things are dynamic, living things. So it's important to kind of keep that training activity going. So if you don't do that, you know, you're going to fail. And I've seen it, and I'm sure you have as well, whether it's limited training on the wrong things, training too early, training too late, you know, because people are slamming it in. And when you bridge to training, I can't help but introduce the topic of the super user, power user, and key user. These people get a lot of attention in my book. You know, this group, I believe, they're so critically important to the success of any transformation effort and the user training and learning that has to happen. So these super users should be kind of the best users out of your business, right? Because they're really going to ultimately drive the business adoption. And a term I've kind of coined in my book is the business adoption rate, which you can start to quantify, right? So the super users need to be fully on board, and you should do everything you can do to enable them for success, including this robust training. But in addition to training, another best practice I talk about in the book, it's called a two-in-the-box model, right? Because normally you're going to have your systems integrator on board helping you do the implementation. As a best practice, what you should do is you should put those people side by side. You know, if it's your order-to-cash consultant, put them with your order-to-cash super users. And there should be a transition or a learning transition plan, because you're not going to have those consultants forever. So it's important that these super users get the knowledge and acquire the knowledge from these consultants. Hence that two-in-the-box reference, where they're kind of working side by side throughout the project. And then when the project goes live, the consultants roll off, your super user is now that first point of contact in your project. And all that knowledge has hopefully been imparted to them. And you can quantify and qualify that that's happened.
And so there's a knowledge transfer step there that you're overtly calling out with the two-in-the-box model. Is that right, David?
Absolutely. And in addition to the classic training, there's a whole transition plan with your consultants. And then there's one other training topic that I really bring to the forefront in the book as well, because, you know, after you go live, what happens to training? Your consultants roll off. You know, is training absorbed? Where did it go? Right. So basically, another key to success is establishing this center of excellence to sustain the solution, or a COE, right? As part of their responsibilities, they really need to take over this training and learning mission after the go live, because, you know, you're going to have new users, you're going to have new enhancements, you're going to have upgrades. So if you don't carry that mission forward, you're going to have all of this lack of knowledge, and it's going to be a failure.
So we're talking a lot about those four principles of technology, process, people, and governance.
Mm-hmm.
Is there one action or one of those things not attended to that almost always relates to or contributes to an ERP failure?
Well, ultimately it's governance, because if you don't have governance, you can't pull the others back on track, whether it's change management or process or technology. If you don't have the right body governing it, and you don't have the right technology or tools to provide real-time governance or near real-time governance, they'll be off the rails, and it'll be, you know, who knows how long before you can react to it.
So, David, I have a question regarding monitoring. In what ways would you suggest for our users to monitor their progress? How do they ensure, in terms of governance, that they're on task, they're doing the right things? How, if at all, do you use that information to shift course as needed? So how do you monitor progress? How do you ensure that you're on task? And then how do you use that information to shift course?
Yeah, obviously monitoring progress and governance, which is that fourth pillar, they go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. And it really needs to be a timely, if you're monitoring, you really need a timely automated dashboard that has workflows. Because, you know, classic spreadsheet status reports or even just simple BI dashboards, they have their limits. So this is where I start to, you know, incorporate process mining technology, because it really does enable this real-time automated governance with dashboards and automated workflows. And process mining has a model of really discover and analyze and then enhance, which means, okay, I know what the issue is, now let me correct it. And then it has monitoring. So you basically discover, make the adjustment, monitor it, and then kind of iterate. You know, it's the classic discover, enhance, monitor, and iterate. And so if you use this monitoring on like an example of training, right, and then shifting course. So you would always, you know, obviously you're including monitoring training in your training plan, and you can do that in a number of ways, from just having the trainer quizzing the students to informal or a more formal certification with the business process leaders. But you can also use process mining on test systems. As the users are on these test systems, you can see how these roles and transactions, how well they're performing. And you can kind of use that to then adjust and adapt your training program.
So we're talking about adjusting and adapting at a governance level. How do you see governance in terms of culture? And when you think about the most successful projects, is there a cultural component to governance?
I think culture and governance kind of do go, you know, they're all tied together, because culture is tied to all the other elements. So if your culture isn't shifting, if you're governing those other elements and you're not seeing progress, all of those things often lead back to culture. Right? Are people adaptive to change? Are they willing to change? You know, those are the types of things that monitoring and governing those solutions will kind of drive back to culture.
David, when you go through an ERP organizational change process, are there even any conflicts, or is it more typical that everything is kumbaya?
That's funny.
Listeners, take note. Everybody in the call is laughing right now.
I kind of asked that question, David, sarcastically, maybe slightly facetious, but I'm curious to hear what you have to say about that point.
Yeah, the ERP projects and the message that organizational change is needed, I think they've made the rounds, if you will, and almost everybody's going to say, oh, yeah, I'm all behind this transformation, right? But like most change, everybody's on board until, wait, that's going to impact me. I'm on this project where this executive, really, you know, he's talking up this great game. He's, you know, just spoken of what a proponent he was to implement the new ERP project, right? He's fine until he realizes that the group that he manages, this team is going to be displaced by the new COE team, and his team's going to get absorbed there. So he doesn't have a mission and responsibility. So what happens? Well, behind the scenes, right, he starts to talk to anyone who's listening how this new organizational change, it's not going to work, how customers are going to be negative impacted, right? So this friction resurfaces then in different ways. So what does it do? Well, it adds time to the plan. So you've got to go address a problem that really isn't a problem, but it's created by this bad apple, if you will. So this is an example of, you know, where it could have been addressed, right? This is poor governance, because the governing body saw this happening, right? And they let this go on too long without addressing. And when you see an issue, you got to go back and correct it. So, you know, it's not unusual to get to kumbaya until, wait, it's me that's impacted?
David, this is so close that I'm both laughing and crying on the inside here. Leadership modeling, from my perspective, is probably one of the most valuable and impactful tools we have to enable change. And you've highlighted a few of the negative aspects of modeling. But what modeling behaviors, mindsets, approaches define your best ERP implementation experiences. Can you share that for our listeners?
Absolutely, Jonathan. And you know, unequivocally, choosing the right leaders is very important. So, you know, you have to have engaged executive leadership with a strong team of active involved stakeholders and business process owners and super users. So, because all these people have to, you know, they have to carry a willingness to learn and not only a good understanding of the business, but they have to understand the underlying corporate culture. They have to know who the advocates are, who the naysayers are, and the corresponding challenges. So if you, you know, if you have a culture of change, it's always willing to try new things, you know, if you're willing to adapt and improve, and if you also have good advisors, you've chosen good partners and advisors, those are the attributes that I think really, you know, encourage a good leadership style.
So Dave, I'm going to put you on the spot here. And if you can only choose four, so four words, basically four critical success influences, what would you say they are in terms of the success influences that facilitated your success? If you can give me just the top four key things that come to mind, what would those be?
Yeah, I don't think they'll be individual words, but I can kind of give you four bullets, if you will.
Fair enough. Perfect.
You know, first, and it is a tough question because of a variety of challenges, right? So we all know that, you know, these all have caveats to them. But at the end of the day, I think I'd list that you really need to have an executive leader who's open and honest and candid discussions with a willingness to adopt the resulting recommendations, right? If you're talking to someone who's closed-minded and they've already made a, you know, what's the point, right? I hate to put it that way, but, you know, so that's number one. Number two, I think clear and well-documented requirements, business strategy, and vision. These people, they know where they're going, right? Or you can help them steer where they're going, or, you know, so help them get there. So that's number two. And then the third, and this may sound familiar, but basically you have to have a comprehensive and adaptive framework, right? We've been talking about it, and I'll keep using that word framework, but it guides people in enabling the underlying change management processes and technology pillars. In addition to that framework, that whole discover, enhance, monitor. So number four would be that effective governance model that, you know, is exercised. So those four probably don't surprise you based on a lot of my the background out of the book and everything I've kind of advocated so far.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. That was well said for a pretty loaded question. And there's a lot to that we could talk about probably for an hour. So great points. Thank you.
David, one thing that's coming up here for me is you've talked about process mining a bit, and I want to dive into that. And I'm paraphrasing from your book here, but process mining can be combined with effective governance and change management to empower teams and accelerate your time to value in ERP organizational change. Can you elaborate on this idea of process mining and its relevance and benefits to ERP organizational change success?
Absolutely, Jonathan. I'm a big advocate here. You know, process mining technology is something I'm really excited about. And it's, you know, until kind of the last several years, it's largely been an academic exercise. You know, because we've made these advances in technology, it's now mainstream.
Okay.
So what it allows you to do, for those who aren't familiar with it, is visualize all the details of your business process and what used to be buried in complex ERP data, right? So in simple terms, process mining is based on, it does deep analytics and AI of the system event log. And the event log is basically built from three things. One, the order numbers. Two, all the related order process steps. And three, the timestamp of each step.
Okay.
So then you have this log. And by the way, this log can be much more sophisticated to include things like usernames, customer data, part data. But that's kind of the basic structure, right? And all systems have this event log / audit trail, right? So, and then process mining has standard system connectors. So now you can easily visualize almost immediately what's truly happening in your business process and management. And some of the words I've heard describe this visualization is an X-ray of your process or a digital twin. But let me share a before and after example, right? So before process mining, so if you're going to do your new 2B process, right? You design, agree on the new process with new roles, responsibilities, configure it, test it, train users, go live with it right after business goes live, and the new process doesn't work as expected because of things like gaps or unknowns during the process design. And then your end users aren't well prepared because the training didn't cover them for those things. So assuming this is an order to cash process, all of a sudden customer orders, deliveries, they're all delayed or missed. You know, business starts to scramble during go live. And then this turns into a critical situation at go live. You bring in consultants to stabilize and a situation like this, and it always takes longer than you expected, and your users start to lose faith in the solution. And the problems just kind of go on from there. Versus after with process mining, you develop the to-be process based on accurate X-ray of your existing processes. Your test cycles are accelerated from increased key insight. Your businesses get an accurate detailed process view. You adapt as needed. Your user change management training before go live is able to identify issues and you address them before go live. You verify your data. You go live and the process works as expected. Gaps don't exist. Your end users are well prepared. You know, on and on. And at the end of the day, you know, you have this proactive governance. So your business users are empowered because process mining has an intuitive user interface. So they're empowered to dynamically create workflows to proactively manage their tasks. You don't have a critical situation. The business accelerates its adoption. And because your users are buying in, you see success. So let me just kind of wrap that process mining up with basically, you know, talking about how, you know, what it really is doing is it's driving the value realization that hasn't been achievable before process mining. And it's applied to both, you know, as is, how you're currently processed or to be, and it supports all process details, right? And some of the use cases, they range from merger acquisition divestitures to process automation to finance, customer service, and supply chain process optimization to ERP systems upgrades. At the end of the day, all these inefficiencies and efficiencies and best practices your business are made visible, right? So you can continuously improve and empower your users. The time to value gets accelerated because the time to identify and address inefficiencies and then confirm and verify the results are accelerated and your effort is reduced. And there are many customer success testimonials.
Dave, that's rich insight. Thanks. We're going to have you back on the show just to discuss process mining for an hour. that's a must have. So look out for that invite. Really insightful. Thank you. I'd like to dig a little deeper to add to Jonathan's previous question. In your book, you discuss governance quite a bit. Obviously, that's a major pillar of your framework, as you'd mentioned. But you mentioned, quote unquote, effective governance. You know, I think we talked a little bit about why is governance critical, but what does effective governance look like? Can you give us some of examples? Because, you know, governance is one thing, but doing it well and doing it effectively is often another thing. But what would you, you know, kind of generically say about what effective governance looks like?
Yeah, and that's an excellent question. You know, it's in my mind, it's really the ability to see, adjust, monitor, and repeat as needed in a timely way with the right people. So basically, you know what's going across your organizational change, your process change, and technology change to meet the business needs. So effective governance would include both the right governing bodies that are in place to make the key decisions when decisions have to be made, whether that's your board, your executive leadership team, your program office, or even, you know, your project team or COE. And then you tie that with these right tools that provide process transparency and visibility to make the best informed decisions possible and monitor the results and then adjust as needed. This enables driving a plan that satisfies what you and your stakeholders initially defined as success. And let me just share an example about ineffective governance. You know, those are the things you need for effective governance, but just to kind of reinforce it through an example. So this PMO has a sub-team status readout twice a week on how they're doing on metrics, right? And the sub-teams develop reports that their team leads then to adjust and approve before sharing with the executives. Because remember, nobody wants to look bad in front of executives, right?
Yeah.
So all this time was spent on gathering project development data and status readouts. And as we say, kumbaya-ing each other. And at the end of the day, the project ends up with a couple million lines of custom code and a difficult to maintain solution with lots of go live hiccups and extended go live hypercare support needs. And the project never comes close to meeting the expectations. So this is an example of ineffective governance, starting from the leaders and governing bodies, to the processes they use to govern, to the way they collect the data, to not focusing on the right metrics, to the end business results. And this effort could have been corrected at multiple points along its trajectory had it had the right effective governance and guardrails.
Sure.
So David, I want, before we move to our next question, I want to just make sure I'm capturing this and offering this to our listeners. So I'm hearing in your response three different criteria needed for effective governance. Where the decision or the governance level stands, so at the center of excellence or at the board level, an ability to see things occur and adjust in real time. It's so empowering, so important. And finally, a way of course correcting those decisions at multiple different levels, so you don't end up with a couple of thousand lines of custom code. Does that really capture it?
Yeah, it really does. I think that's a good summary, Jonathan. I really do.
So, listeners, this really important where, who, and how would be how I would capture that.
Yep.
David, this has been such a fascinating conversation, and this is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, question to ask. If you were going to give advice to our listeners, you already are, but if you're going to give them one piece of advice about successful ERP implementations, what would you tell them? And how would you boil down all of your experience and insight into a short 3-sentence or less answer about what to see, what to do, and how to act to achieve ERP success?
Yeah, I don't know if I can get to 4 sentences or 3 sentences, but let me at least give it a shot. First, I would say your ERP and business environment has to follow these 4 steps, right? First, establish a mindset of change and innovation throughout the organization and culture.
Yep. Right?
You have to have the good leaders, communication, empowerment. 2, create business processes and master data that you're fully confident in because you have X-ray-like transparency of them. 3, use a technology platform and ecosystem built on solid partnerships that align with your needs, right? And these things must enable the business to respond rapidly to change and obviously satisfy your customers.
Yep.
And then the 4th bullet would be, okay, wrap these 3 things, right, these transformational pillars that I described, in a proactive, effective, real-time governance approach that has accountability and transparency, and you can leverage tools such as process mining and AI. So I think that if you kind of put this framework in place to effectively govern and adapt, and you have all of this in place, you'll then be able to drive continual improvement, best practices, and be equipped to not only win the game, but build a world-class team and create many years of success.
Yeah. Well said. Great, great advice. David, thank you so much for your time today. As a friend and a passionate colleague, we truly appreciate your expertise, experience, and insight. Thank you again, and be well.
Thanks for an awesome conversation.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, Jack.
Please join us in our next episode as we discuss industry-specific ERP and differentiators, people, process, and technology with Mr. Paul Van Meter. Mr. Van Meter is co-founder of ProShop ERP. ProShop is an ERP solution for small to medium manufacturing companies. Mr. Van Meter is also board member of the Pacific Northwest Aerospace Alliance, or PNAA, where he helps to ensure that PNAA's mission of serving organizations in the aerospace and defense industry is being executed and bringing value to all stakeholders. Mr. Van Meter also has extensive experience running an aerospace manufacturing company for many years. Please join us again next week.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review, because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, 1, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. 2, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change. And 3, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.